It is important to educate people in the West about African culture and who African people are, because a lot of what is taught in the West about Africa is false. A good starting point, therefore, is to understand the way in which European nations attempted to rewrite local histories from a purely European perspective. This is an activity that Europeans have engaged in all over the world. Europeans have discovered places that had been inhabited for thousands of years. Wow, that's one hell of a discovery. We, Europeans, are inherently given a single point of view. It is a point of view of the aggressor and the colonizer. It was intended to degrade local customs and practices as primitive and uncultured, and its constant use ever since has made that language normal practice. It dehumanizes through ignorance and supremacism the emotions, education, understanding, and sheer structural depth and wisdom of African cultures. The very map by which we view Africa today shows us a collection of nations that the peoples of Africa would never have chosen for themselves. There are lines across that continent that do not exhibit millennia of trade and cultural growth, rather the limits of European interests in those areas. Today we see an African continent divided, not because these nations have chosen for themselves to be divided, but because the administrative divisions imposed on the continent for centuries have given a false identity of nationhood over cultural diversity, which is being propped up to this very day by imperialism. The wars and genocides we see occurring in Sudan and Congo, and the battles and conflicts in Nigeria, are all being heavily supported by external colonial interests. Those interests, in turn, are being facilitated by business needs in sourcing vital natural resources. Why are these colonial interests doing it in this way? Because the idea of paying the right fee, a fair fee, to local people is considered beneath these international businesses. Or because it is simply cheaper to exploit and destroy local communities and ecosystems than to barter on equal footing. The next time you consider the histories of the world, try to imagine how those histories would differ if they had been told by indigenous peoples. This is Tuana Mike. Rise up and be curious.
Dung weche pek kudwelo mabiro etu anda mic. Dung parodit kod jok mawuoye tu anda mic. Seche tim sud buta wawinji etu anda mic. Wala wachokre wabed piny biwawinje ero chako domomit ndi podcast makende.
I'm joined once again by a political activist in Lagos, Ademola. How's it going?
Zach, thank you very much. It's good in Lagos. It's bright and beautiful. How is Berlin?
Funnily enough, now I can say to you, as you know, Berlin has the tendency of being quite choppy. And so at the moment, it's a bit cold. But what came as a big surprise to me was earlier in the year, as in last month, I think it was, you actually came to Berlin and we had a chance to meet, which is something that I had never, ever thought would happen. But you turned up and you were involved in an extremely interesting project. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Zach. I mean, I think it was a very, unexpected trip. But I think it's very important to not only, spread the messages of our people, of the history of our people locally, within the continent. It's also very important to take the history, the knowledge of our ancestors across the Atlantic. So for me, The trip to Berlin was primarily it was primarily me carrying out the functions for which I have signed up, you know, informing the people about Africa, informing, you know, especially those whose governments have committed, you know, horrendous crimes in Africa against my people. It's very important to, you know, enlighten them about the truth about Africa, because, you know, you agree with me, majority of the information that, you know, Western people have about Africa is false. So it's very important that we engage in, you know, discussions like that to enlighten our people locally and internationally.
Yeah, and on top of that, it's important to remind people of some of the events, as you say, that occurred in history. Now, a lot of discussion has been centered around the slave trade and how European nations really accelerated a business that was already taking place, of course, towards the Middle East, but not in the way that it kind of developed under European nations. And as much as that, those horrible years, those centuries have been talked about, not enough has it actually been talked about with regards to some of the events that took place. But when you came to Berlin, one of the main topics that you discussed, of course, was the Berlin Conference of 1884 to 1885. And today is actually the anniversary of the start of that conference. It began on the 15th of November. And a lot of people, for some reason, think that this was a conference that took only 2 or 3 days. But actually, it lasted into February, I think, of 1885. And the only continent that perhaps wasn't represented was the continent of Africa. I mean, obviously you know about what happened with the Berlin Conference. You spoke about it when we were in Berlin. I joined some of the opportunities that were there to have a conversation about some of these topics, and you spoke about it very eloquently. But how does it make you feel? Just that particular thing. Somebody's talking about your land, but you're not allowed to have a voice in that discussion.
It's very important, like you said. I mean, why this month marks the, you know, I think is it 130 something years of the Berlin Conference. You know, people think that the Berlin Conference is an event in history that happened and we can just move past it. It's just one of those things that, you know, you can move over. But, you know, the Berlin Conference in 1884 was the beginning of the partitioning of Africa. The slave trade ended after, you know, the British Empire could not, you know, fund the plantation system. There was a rise of industrial revolution. There was a change of economic system. So that needed, instead of slaves now, they needed raw materials. So when the slave trade came to an end in 1835, of course, following humiliation by Jean-Jacques Dessalines in Haiti, and the resistance in Africa and in the Atlantic against slavery, you know, the slave trade came to an end and colonialism began, because the Industrial Revolution had happened and the industrial capitalist system needed raw materials. So the Berlin Conference was a gathering to settle, you know, intra-European disputes, because the French, the British, the Portuguese, they were, you know, fighting over territories in Africa. You know, if you look at Togo, if you look at Cameroon today, Cameroon is colonized by France. Cameroon is colonized by England. Cameroon is colonized by Germany. You know, if you look at the war in Haiti, it was because the British were trying to colonize a territory that the French were already colonizing. So it was an intra-European affair. So to settle all these disputes within the European countries of which territories in Africa to colonize, they sat in Berlin in 1884, where, you know, they, you know, really settled that dispute by partitioning Africa amongst themselves, where we had the most notorious man in history, King Leopold, had a portion of Africa, Congo, to himself as a private property. You know, we had Germany was allocated Namibia, Togo, you know, Cameroon, Tanzania.
Yeah. And just interesting, just to look at some of the participants. So obviously, there's Germany because they hosted it. Austria, Hungary. In this list, it says International Congo Society, but that was represented by somebody called Gabriel August van der Straten Pontos, who doesn't seem to me to be of. I don't know too many Congolese names, but it doesn't sound particularly Congolese. Spain, Denmark, United States, France, the United Kingdom, Italy, Netherlands, Portugal, Russia, Sweden, Norway, and the Ottoman Empire. So these are countries essentially that came together, as you said, to partition the continent of Africa for their own consumption without any consideration whatsoever of the people that live there. And I mean, when we try to think about how such an arrangement could be made, we have to recognize the fact that there was zero law, there was zero legal, international legal mechanism which could stop these colonizers, these barbarians, essentially, from going around the world and doing whatever they wanted. I mean, even today, unfortunately, some of these acts occur when we're supposed to have international law, but they at least try to justify what they're doing with some lie or other, and we'll get onto that in our next episode. But in those days, they didn't even have to pretend. They just divided it up and did what they wanted. When we think that there was, because people talk about colonialization and colonialism, and that there seems to be this concept in people's minds that the European nations brought something to the areas that they colonized. But the only thing they brought was destruction and death and very little else.
There are so many people that are deluded because, you know, when they look at the industries that were built during the colonial era, you know, they think that it's one of those things to really be happy about. Because, you know, this was a time when, as an African, you had to move with passes in your own land. You know, you can understand that this was actually the cause of Sharpeville massacre in South Africa. You know, colonialism is really making you a foreigner in your own land. You know, a territory that is divided by the colon lines, by economic lines. You know, just a bunch of invaders who have arrived in your territory and, you know, have wielded and usurped the economic and political power. You know, so when people talk about the Berlin Conference, I mean, they seem to think that it doesn't have a lasting effect even till date. You know, the territories that have been colonized by Britain, that had been partitioned by France, that had been, you know, invaded by Belgium, still carry on, you know, the legacies and the vestiges of, you know, colonial rule. If you look at, you know, a country like Nigeria, so many internal tensions that is happening in Nigeria is as a result of the senseless, you know, amalgamation and partitioning of the country by the British Empire. Because as at the time when Nigeria was put together, it was hastily put together to serve the interest of the British Empire at the time that there was economic depression in the 1920s, in the 1940s, really. So it's very important to note that a huge and a substantial part of Africa still exists as legacy of colonialism. And, you know, it's very important that we engage in discussions and, you know, pragmatic, you know, solutions, you know, to decolonize our continent.
Yeah, and when you were in Berlin, I imagine some of the discussions that you had, I don't believe any of these discussions were like official discussions between nations, but they invited specific types of individuals such as yourself, people with a voice, people with a certain following, people with a certain passion when it comes to dealing with these kinds of legacies. And what kind of discussions did you have? What kind of intentions were there, and is there something from that trip that you have taken away which you would see as a positive for you?
I think one of the things that fascinates me and that interests me and actually surprises me is I find it interesting that Germany is willing to actually have a discussion about its colonial past. It's very important. It's very important. I mean, a country like Britain is even unwilling. And before I even came to Berlin, many of the artifacts that were looted from the Benin Empire in 1897 after the sacking of the empire by the British naval troops, we have some of these artifacts ended in museums in Berlin. And upon my arrival and before my arrival, I learned that, you know, a substantial part of them have returned back to my home country, and the last batch would soon be returned immediately after I had left. I mean, it's very important that, you know, these conversations exist. You know, it's very important that, you know, we have a moment of healing, a moment of reconciliation, you know, a moment of taking our accountability, because legally and internationally, Namibia, who the country who happens to be the biggest victim of German colonialism, has engaged in, you know, bilateral talks with the German government on reconciliation, you know, compensation, the returning of artifacts, the colonial remains, the skeletal remains of those who died during the German genocide, during the German genocidal campaign in Tanzania, in the Maji Maji uprising, during the German, you know, genocide in Namibia against the Naman Herero people. So we learned that these skeletal remains still remain in German museums, in Germany's museums, and conversations were had with officers from the Foreign Office representing the federal government that these remains are being returned to the various countries that they were taken from. So I think it's very important that not only should we acknowledge that there is a colonial past, it's very also important that we have a moment of reconciliation, healing, you know, to move ahead and to build meaningful partnerships towards the future.
Yeah, and just one final question and one final point then. When one of the occasions that I met you, we went to the Holocaust Memorial here in Berlin, and conversations were had about genocide, about responsibility, and you talked there about the responsibility that Germany wishes to take. But I believe that there may have been some other conversations in general that were not perhaps officially on the agenda, where attention was drawn towards genocides occurring elsewhere. In one particular occasion, the genocide that has occurred in Gaza, and unfortunately under situations where people could say that some European nations are complicit in that, among those number obviously are Germany. How do you feel was the response when you brought up this inconsistency with regards to the plan for Germany to deal with some of its historical legacy, and yet in today's policies, that responsibility seems to be mislaid?
Thank you very much, Zach, for that question. And I think one of the most interesting things that I took away from the trip was the brilliant people, the team that I had the privilege to be with. I mean, this one of the most brilliant set of Africans I've ever met in my life. We, you know, shared the same sentiments, shared the same opinion on so many of the issues. And I could remember one of this time when we had a dinner and a journalist was sent from the Foreign Office to participate in the dinner with us, and the issue of Gaza was brought up. Of course, we didn't shy away by speaking up for the people of Gaza, who are victims of German proxy genocide, because Germany is the second biggest arms supplier to Israel after the United States. So it's very, you know, practical to draw a straight line of genocide straight from Germany to Palestine. We brought up these conversations and, you know, we said, look, you cannot absolve yourself from the guilt that you committed against the Jews in 1945 by supporting another Holocaust. These difficult conversations we had, of course, we informed even the journalist that came. We had the conversations that the double standard, you know, condemning the invasion of Ukraine by Russia right at your border, while at the same time supporting the occupation of Gaza by Israel. So this double standard and all of these difficult conversations were brought up, and I am still really glad that I shared the same page with all my colleagues.
Yeah, wonderful. And just one, I wanted that to have been the, or at least from my side, the last point that I raised. But you mentioned the wonderful group of individuals, and I spoke to only one or two of them. Unfortunately, I wasn't part of the group, so therefore I didn't have the opportunities that you did. But I mean, do you want to talk about, you know, the people that were there a little bit, and what nations they came from, and and also how the atmosphere was between you, because you say there that they're a wonderful group of Africans, of course. But how close were you, and how long did it take you to bond?
It took us to bond almost immediately, because I mean, in Berlin there are not so many black people, so we were conspicuously from Africa, so we bonded by the colonizers very immediately. And I was a Nigerian on the trip. We had two people from Zimbabwe, we had one person from Zambia, we had one person from Burkina Faso, we had two people from Kenya, and we had one person from Ethiopia, and the last person from Nigeria, which is me. So we are about 9 in total. So yeah, it was a very interesting trip, very interesting conversations, and yeah. And we visited a lot of interesting places in Berlin, the Freie University, where we had conversations with the professor of political science about Africa. It was also a learning moment for me, you know, because there are so many informations that I did not have, that I had learned during the trip from the places that we visited and from my colleagues.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. And obviously it was great for us to have the opportunity to meet. I guess I never expect to actually meet some of the people who I communicate with from different parts of the world, but through meeting you and, you know, embracing you, not just, you know, emotionally and politically, but also to be able to give you a hug while you were here, for me was a great moment. So I thank the German government for providing us that opportunity, even though that was not for them important, but obviously important for us. So it was great to see you, and thanks again for taking the time to come and speak with me, Ademola, and I look forward to the next one. I wish you all the best.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, brother. I hope to see you again in Berlin.